This podcast was brought to you by Optus Stadium, now taking orders for your next breakfast or lunch meeting.
Good afternoon and welcome to At Close of Business, a daily podcast hosted by Business News.
The tide is changing at Scarborough, with differing views over the coastal strip's revitalisation creating rifts between major stakeholders. On today's episode of At Close of Business, senior journalist Claire Terrell outlines the past decade of change at Scarborough Beach, how government investment and major high-rise developments have changed the suburb's skyline, and how the community is navigating uncertainty, angst, and concern amongst local residents.
But first, here's the news you need to know today.
The state government has recommenced the sale of the TAB today in a bid to secure the long-term future of the state's racing industry. The sale process was suspended last year due to the uncertainty surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic, but at the request of the state's Racing and Wagering Board, the state government has agreed to commence a new sale process supporting an independently sustainable and competitive industry. The new process commenced today with the release of an invitation for expressions of interest to the market and an opportunity for private operators to present their credentials and provide indicative bids. Should an appropriate arrangement be negotiated, a new wagering operator is expected to be in place towards the end of next year. And privately owned Perth company Wright Prospecting has posted yet another extraordinarily large annual profit as it reaped the benefits of the booming iron ore market. Its net profit after tax increased by 45% to a record $297 million for the year to June 2021, according to financial statements lodged this week with ASIC. This reflected a 44% lift in revenue to $435 million, with virtually all revenue coming from iron ore royalties and its share of income from the Hancock and Wright partnership. As the company does not have any operations and has minimal expenses, the profits flow straight through to its low-profile shareholders. It paid $274 million in dividends during the financial year, up from $199 million in the prior year. The company had $67 million in retained profits as at June 30, but has paid a further $52 million in dividends. Wright Prospecting was established by the late Peter Wright, who is best known as the business partner of the late Lang Hancock. As a result of agreements they struck during the 1960s, their families have benefited ever since from lucrative iron ore royalties paid by Rio Tinto. And Wesfarmers-backed Covalent Lithium has proposed changes to its $1.9 billion mine and refinery project, including the construction of a solar plant to supply the open pit mine and processing plant with renewable energy. Covalent, a joint venture between Wesfarmers and Chilean business SQM, received environmental approval to develop an open pit mine and processing facilities at Mount Holland in the Shire of Yilgarn back in 2019. The mine, which is understood to be among the largest undeveloped hard rock lithium deposits in Australia, is expected to produce 400,000 tonnes of spodumene concentrate annually. In May, the company also received approval to operate a lithium refinery on a 40-hectare state government-owned site in Kwinana, which would produce about 50,000 tonnes of lithium hydroxide annually. The implied cost of developing both projects is understood to be $1.9 billion, with the company hoping to begin production in the second half of 2024. Construction on the mine project began back in July, but the company has now lodged an amendment to its existing approval with the EPA. Covalent has proposed the disturbance of an additional 56 hectares in order to facilitate the construction and operation of a solar plant, as well as changes to the disposal of tailings and waste generated from the Kwinana refinery. It has also requested permission to modify flora, vegetation and fauna exclusion areas. It is not yet clear how the proposed changes will affect the total cost of the project. This morning, the EPA released the proposal for 7 days of public comment.
We'll be right back.
You have a thought. Most people ignore that thought. End story here. Or you could explore it, collaborate, feel welcome. Find a quiet spot, find a loud spot, find your own spot. Be you. Or form your own opinion. Get inspired by moments around you. Plan to make your plans come to life. And then change the whole world. or some of the world, or just your world. So don't ignore that thought. This is Free Thinking.
I'm really glad that you're sat with us today, Claire, because we're talking about Scarborough. Now, I live in the south of Perth, and my girlfriend lives in Scarborough, which means I spend about 45 minutes commuting up to Scarborough every single weekend. But, you know, it's worth it. Not just for my lovely partner, but also because Scarborough is so beautiful with the views of the beach, the developments, and the amenity that's on offer. But you've written this piece in our latest issue, and for an inaugural piece, it's really fascinating and in-depth. And it investigates an issue between the City of Stirling and Development WA over a plot of land or a development area in Scarborough that's proven very contentious with a lot of interested parties. Can you tell me what the issue is at Scarborough Beach?
So the area you're referring to is known as the Scarborough Redevelopment Area, which was handed to the City of Stirling to facilitate a major revitalisation in 2013 when Barnett was in power. And then 1 year later, the State Government Authority, the Metropolitan Redevelopment Authority, which are now called Development WA, I think they were also called Land Corp at one point.
I believe it was an amalgamation of sorts.
And they are now taking charge of the development, and therefore has created a little bit of a rift between local and state government. So the local government had a master plan in place which stipulated the height restrictions that they would like in place for the area, you know, after community consultation. Development WA has loosely followed that plan, but they've got something called a discretionary clause, which has caused a lot of contention. Basically, this clause allows for developments that meet certain criteria in community benefits be built above and beyond that 12-storey limit or 18-storey limit for certain areas. Because the rendezvous, when you look at rendezvous, that's actually 18 stories. So the city's intention was for buildings not to be above that limit. But, you know, when we look at what's actually getting approved, things like Three Oceans, which was highly controversial, they've recently kind of revived their application after it being rejected in 2018. The new application features three towers, one of 46 stories, one of 20 stories, and one of 16 stories. And also there's a few others. So Sentinel received development application for their 24 story project on the corner of West Coast Highway and Manning Street. That will be 24 stories altogether. And Woolworths as well, they want to build a two tower project, one of 29 and one of 12 stories. So I spoke to Mark Irwin, who's the City of Stirling Mayor, and he said that this kind of approach could lead to a higgledy-piggledy development, which I quite like that term. It's stuck in my mind. So that was his argument, that if we keep getting these developments approved that are not of the heights initially specified, that it would lead to a really scattergun approach and a mixed landscape.
As you know, you had quite a conversation with Mr. Irwin, and I've heard you on the phone with him a few times this week. And he seems to take issue with this discretionary clause.
Yeah, he's not the only one. The community are as well. So there's a group called Sunsets Not Skyscrapers, which formed in 2018 in response to the Three Oceans initial development. And their argument is that this discretionary clause, you know, should not be in there. It deviates from the master plan, you know, and they also ask questions, where does the discretionary power end? You know, what are we going to end up with? They describe the decisions being made, the approvals being made as ad hoc. Important to stress, though, from Mark Irwin and also from this community group who seem to have aligned, well, maybe not really aligned, but aligned on their values now. They're not anti-development. As Mark Irwin said, they're not a community of NIMBYs. They believe in development, but they want it to be done in a measured way. So importantly, the redevelopment area is actually set to be handed back to the city at the end of next year. I believe the process is called normalisation, which just means that it will be going from the state government back to the local government. And one of the first things that Mr. Irwin said he would like to do when this occurs is to eliminate that discretionary clause and go back to that master plan that he set out in consultation with the community.
And there's a wide range of voices in this article, including the Property Council, and they spoke in favour of some transparency in the process, did they not?
Yeah, so the Property Council were sympathetic to this discretionary clause in terms of it delivering high quality design outcomes and community benefit. I spoke with the Property Council WA Deputy Executive Director Emily Young, who acknowledged that balancing development with the community expectations was a challenge. She also highlighted the benefits of greater transparency in the planning system, which was a result of their consultation about the planning process earlier this year. She also acknowledged that, you know, communities change over time. So people that were opposing this project years ago, I mean, many of them might not even be there today. So it's important to continue that community consultation process as communities evolve and as people realise that, you know, the landscape might not be what they thought it would be 10, 20 years ago.
Well, it's always difficult finding the balance on development, and it doesn't surprise me that there's difficulty in Scarborough. I hope that this impasse is resolved, and I hope that a wonderful mixed-use development site is worked out for the benefit of both developers and residents in the future. Claire, thank you so much for your time today on your first episode of At Close of Business.
Thank you.
We understand that business relies on being informed. That's why Business News is your most reliable source of news, industry insights, and business connections. To stay fully informed, we encourage you to subscribe to our emails, flick through our magazine, and visit businessnews.com.au for daily news updates. It's the best way to ensure you have the information you need to be future ready. Business News. More news, more insights, more connections.
This podcast was brought to you by Optus Stadium, now taking orders for your next breakfast or lunch meeting. If you like what you've heard, head to our Spotify page to like and subscribe. New episodes of At Close of Business are available every day in time for our afternoon wrap. I'm Jordan Murray. See you tomorrow.